Yeah, make yourself comfortable, because I'll talk to start with. So we'll be exploring the fifth precept, and then we'll have a little bit of reflection time, followed by groups, and then period of practice. So, yeah, we are in our concluding morning session, and yeah, we're getting to the juicy parts. We're getting to the delicious parts of the tantric precepts. And I was saying yesterday, when we're discussing precept four, well, we're on this trajectory and we're going into increasing subtlety and increasing delicacy. So we've been exploring the tantric precepts and we looked at how to clear obstructions. So with the first precepts, to not obstruct the energy of another person. And with the second precepts, really looking at this taking and giving of energy. So not draining the energy of others and giving freely of our own energy. And with the third precept, it was looking at the use of energy. So directing the energy, not misusing it. So that was the third precept, not to misuse energy. And the fourth one was using it appropriately. So beginning to discern how we actually do that using of the energy. And that precept was using it for whatever purpose. The energy was appropriate for that purpose and not inappropriate. So we highlighted that purpose and motivation as being really important. So with the fifth precept, we're looking at the quality of the energy. So we're going from concern about how the energy is flowing and what the flow is like and direction of that flow and how it's being utilized. With the fifth precept, we're looking at the quality of that flow. What do we want that energy to be like? What quality we want that energy to be? And which traditional precept does it link with? So it links with the fifth one. And the fifth precept is, I undertake to abstain from taking intoxicants in its negative form. And when we were chanting it, we chant Suramerya Majja Pamadatana. So this word Pamadatana, Pamada, is intoxication. Or you could sort of translate that as carelessness or laxity. So with this particular precept, I undertake to abstain from taking intoxicants. The Pamadatana is that opposite of vigilance. It's this heedlessness, you know, as opposed to non-heedlessness. So we were discussing vigilance a little bit yesterday. So this fifth precept makes that vigilance. The quality of vigilance is really important in our practice. And in the positive sense, we say, with mindfulness clear and radiant, I purify my mind. With mindfulness clear and radiant, I purify my mind. So this positive precept, we are entering into the territory of the actions of mind. So we're getting into the core, into the foundation of our actions. It's almost like when you have a house and you've got the whole structure, you need some kind of foundation. And our mind is that foundation, our mental states, as Bodhilila was talking about, that is really the foundation for our actions. So as we went through the precepts, the first precept, the first three precepts were focusing especially on actions of body. Yesterday evening, we started looking at speech as a bridge between the mind and the body. And this fifth precept is really about the mind. So we're turning inwards. We're really beginning to examine internal experience. And with the negative precepts, I suppose, you know, not taking intoxicants. Well, why that? You know, is it like Buddhists? Are we just a bunch of boring people who are Puritans and not want to have fun? Actually, it's not about that. It's not about seeing intoxicant as something bad. So there is not this judgment around it, but there is a choice about deciding, what do I want my mind to be like? What do I want the quality of my mind? And when you take intoxicants, that affects your mind. It affects the quality of our mind. So you might take a precept to abstain from taking intoxicants because not because you see intoxicants as something bad, but because you really are concerned with your mind and that quality of the mind. And I really witnessed that. My dad was an alcoholic, and I think I've experienced him over a period of 40 years. And especially in my sort of decade, the last decade, he became like a zombie. It's almost like he was like, you know, walking. And it was like he was asleep. He certainly wasn't awake. And I think last 4 years, he's been sober. And often when I, we WhatsApp sometimes. So when I WhatsApp or if we have a Skype, the quality of his face, the sort of aliveness. And sometimes my dad looks a bit Tibetan or Mongolian. So you've got this joy, and then this joy exuberates out of him. So I've got this, you know, really seeing what drinking beer for 40 years does to a being and their mind, and then how that's different when that's not present after that. So I think it's worth for you to considering what that state is for you. You know, what is state of intoxication for you? And I suppose for myself, I had a period of being rebellious, and I smoked for about 2 years. And, you know, cigarette, you've got that whole pleasant experience, especially in the act of smoking. And I was really embracing years of advertising, which was promoting cigarettes and promoting them as something really cool and freeing. So that would be this pleasant experience sort of mixed up with sort of feeling myself to be really cool and decadent and rebellious in some ways. And then what followed up was the reality, the after effect. And often, after I smoke a cigarette, it would knock me out. I would feel dizzy and I would have to lie down. So, you know, like for me, there was this intoxication, and it totally, I think maybe for like 20 minutes, it just knocked me out. So I suppose with intoxication, it can be smoking anything, probably cannabis or any other things that you inhaling may create that intoxication for you, drinking alcohol. But it could be other intoxications. I suppose as a teacher, I could get intoxicated teaching sometimes. Being in a lesson, with especially when I had really exciting group of students, and we would be exploring something, I could actually get really intoxicated. And I imagine that, especially in the kind of media industry, for example, for actors or for performers, you know, fame can have that intoxicating capacity. So with intoxication, it's not just lowering of energy, but it can be that speeding up of energy as well. And the point is that either way, you're getting lost. You're kind of taken over by experience, and this sort of it results in this heedlessness or carelessness, sometimes even recklessness. So the opposite for that is that vigilance. So that's what that precept is trying to get to, you know, to be mindful, with mindfulness clear and radiant, I purify my mind. So mindfulness here is explicitly stated, because that's what's required. The cultivation of that vigilance, needs to be cultivated. And Buddha actually said that as his passing remark, as he was dying, his last words were said to be, "With mindfulness, strive on." And it was this vigilance specifically that he had in mind. And he saw that as important because that brings about the purification of the mind. So the fifth tantric precept is, I undertake to not allow energy to become turbid and to keep it bright and clear. I'm using the word turbid today, and last few days we were using the word turgid. Maybe I'll talk about that a little bit later and explain the thinking behind that. So I undertake to not allow energy to become turbid and to keep it bright and clear. And in some ways, all precepts, all these tantric precepts, they are getting at a particular point, and that is, they're trying to point to us, or they're taking it as given that reality is kind of based on insubstantiality. So nothing has got a fixed substance. So there is no substance, there is no thing, there is not such a thing as something being static. And that applies to ourselves. You know, like, even the fact that I'm wearing glasses today, I didn't used to wear glasses before lockdown. Lockdown kind of brought a new dimension to my visions, and suddenly I wear glasses. So something has changed, you know? As a body, I'm not that fixed matter or fixed substance. There is constant change and things are dynamic and in flow. So there is that flow of energy. In a way, we are energetic beings. Everything is constantly dynamic, active. Things are exchanging all the time. And when I was in solitary in August, I was staying in this one room, which was quite spacious, and there was a fridge in that room, and that fridge had a hum to it. So sometimes when I would sit to meditate, I would just hear the energy in action. I would hear, oh gosh, fridge is alive, you know? There is, it's almost like I could hear the current of electricity passing from the socket into the fridge, and the coolness, the ice sort of being made. And when I would be listening to the fridge, I would kind of think, okay, so here's the fridge. And then I would tune into my own body and I would really look out for these vibrations or for the sound within my body. Or I use the word sound, but it could be sort of felt sense or something tangible. And for yourself, it might be different senses that, you know, what allows you to perceive what's happening within your body energetically. Some people might have images, for example. But for myself, it's almost like I'm hearing my body. And I remember the time when it's almost like I came into awareness that my body is energetic. And it was traveling to a retreat center on a kind of Friday late night. There were delays on the train, so I was arriving late. It was at the end of a long autumn term. If you are at school at all, or if you've got children, you probably know what people are like, or teachers, what teachers are like at the end in December on that last day as they embark on their two-week holiday. So I was on the train and there was this incident where I suddenly felt like I could feel the blood in my veins. It was like I could actually feel flow through my body. And it was actually quite scary. This coming into awareness and suddenly experiencing myself in a new way I haven't noticed before. I find that really scary. And it took some time to, you know, now I'm kind of used to it, and now I'm interested in what it feels like and tuning into it, because it became part of my reality. It becomes part of my experience, and I can play with that. I can discern it, and I suppose it's really interesting sometimes, even having a cup of tea or coffee. That can sort of tune me more into what's happening energetically within the body. Or movement. I remember yesterday when we just moved and when I swung my hands around and then I sat into the meditation posture. Well, I had a lot of energy sort of moving through the body. So it might be useful for you to think about, you know, how does that appear for you? And also, it might be that you might even think like, what is she talking about? It might be like, you know, like, I don't know what she's talking about. That's not in my experience. And I suppose there is a real level of sensitivity and subtlety. And that can take years to build up. So if, for example, you've been practicing over years and there is still no access to that kind of energetic experience, it's worth having a chat with somebody about your meditation, because it's looking specifically about what's happening in your practice and what's happening within your body individually with that. So I suppose you can call on Amoghasiddhi sometimes with our practice, having that courage and bring this attitude of curiosity into our practice. So it's not an attitude of right and wrong, it's more an attitude of curiosity. Okay. Well, this is happening, okay. That's not happening, okay. So it's just that curiosity, so you can explore what's happening energetically within yourself, what's your way of being, and then adjusting, you know, playing really. And I was looking before the retreat, me and Bodhilila, I think I was getting excited. So this is an example of excitement and intoxication where you just go off and you make things. I've made a little poster which we didn't use for our retreat, the unobstructed heart freeing the energy within. And then at the bottom, for electrical beings intended. So this is us, you know, these electrical beings. And you know, what is electricity? It's like when you've got presence of flow of charged particles, eons, and that's what really is happening. There is electricity. And within human cells, they're specialized to conduct circular electrical currents. So really, electricity is required for nervous system. The way in the nervous system operates is we've got these signals being sent through that body through into brain, and that allows for movement, thinking and feeling to kind of take place. If you go for ECG scan, where they're looking at your heart and scanning that, well, that's electrocardiogram. It's actually reflecting the electrical impulses within yourself. So we are these energetic beings or electrical beings. And I get so excited by that. You know, like what excites me about this is that physics and biology sort of beginning to talk about this now and coming up with these instruments to measure this. And there are these practitioners 2,500 years ago, these yogins in tantric tradition. It doesn't have to be just Buddhist tradition. It could be within a Hindu tradition as well. So these yogins, or even martial artists, you know, they had access to this knowledge. They knew it, but they knew it experientially. And they knew it experientially, so they got into it experientially. And for us, that's what we're learning. That's what we're kind of doing in our practice. We're learning experientially on a more and more subtle levels to kind of know what's happening within ourselves and what's happening externally. So yeah, I get really excited, and when I get so excited, here it is, my excitement can just tip into intoxication. Yeah, so it's for me, I have to look out for this, because that's the quality of energy. What can happen is, it's almost like I need to cool it down, yeah? Because it's like the energy, the quality of it has become too high, and that can lead to heedlessness and kind of losing myself. So I suppose we haven't made so much reference to the title of the retreat so far, The Unobstructed Heart, Freeing the Energy Within. And if you're thinking about the five precepts, the first precept is very much about obstruction. And then the precepts, the second, third, fourth, and so on, is about freeing the flow, yeah? So we were looking at the flow being freed. And we're getting to the point, which is why I'm saying it's delicious. The fifth precept is delicious. It's because we're getting to the taste of freedom. What is it like? What is that quality? And Yesterday, Bodhilila was doing these beautiful readings about the oceans in our afternoon session. And actually, a couple of days after Bodhilila was swimming in that ocean that she was talking about, I was swimming in those very spots as well. And when I was in the sea, or when I was in the Atlantic Ocean, you could, you know, I would have this salty water on my lips as I was floating. And I just had that, you know, that phrase comes to mind, just as ocean has but one taste, so does enlightenment. So with the ocean being salty, enlightenment tastes of freedom. And enlightenment, Bodhilila mentioned enlightenment also in relation to bodhicitta, or the awakened mind, or that will to enlightenment. And we've got this taste of freedom here. So when you get that taste of freedom, what you are actually tasting is part of this big mind, expansive mind. And that's versus this small mind. Paramananda talks a lot about big mind and small mind. So you might have, might make a little connection to some of the retreats you've been on. So the big mind is just incredibly expansive. And the small mind is tight. And the small mind is kind of concerned. It's when everything revolves around your mini-me. Yeah? So the big mind is just luminous and clear and bright. I want to read one of my probably favorite readings. One day I'll learn it by heart, because if I had to take one reading with me on a desert island, this would be probably the one. So I'll just read that for you. Without a center, without an edge, the luminous expanse of awareness that encompasses all. This vivid, bright vastness, natural primordial presence, without an inside, without an outside, awareness arisen of itself, as wide as the sky, beyond size, beyond direction, beyond limits, this utter, complete openness, space inseparable from awareness. Within that birthless, wide open expanse of space, phenomena appear like rainbows, utterly transparent. Pure and impure realms, Buddhas and sentient beings are seen, brilliant and distinct. As far as the sky pervades, so does awareness. As far as awareness extends, so does absolute space. Sky, awareness, absolute space, indistinguishably intermixed, immense, infinitely vast, the ground of samsara, the ground of nirvana, or to remain day and night in this state, to enter this state easily, this is joy. Imaho. So, I think Shapka here, is a Tibetan yogi, is trying to point to what this big mind is like, trying to describe that quality of a big mind. And this is where we're trying to get with this fifth tantric precept. So we're trying to really open ourselves into this big, spacious mind. So the fifth precept is to not allow energy to become turbid and to keep it bright and clear. So it's that precept is for us to open ourselves to our experience and to that luminous mind, to that big mind, to that awakeness, to being fully aware. And I just love where it says, without an edge, without inside, outside. So that whole a real vastness. And in the traditional precept, we had with mindfulness clear and radiant. So it using the word radiant, so this is mindfulness helps to radiate light. It's like mindfulness helps us to switch the light on for us. And actually, the mind in its sort of awakened state is just bright. And in the fifth precept, the tantric one, it says to keep it bright and clear. It doesn't say to keep it radiant and clear, it says bright. So there is the, you know, the word bright is like visually dazzling, luminous, not dark. It's like the light is on. So, and that's the opposite of turbid. And turbid is really sort of cloudy, opaque, or murky, muddy, soupy. So it's very different to that quality of luminosity. And me and Bodhidila were using the word turgid in the precepts so far, but I think the word turbid might be a little bit more fitting, because with turgid we're talking about congested, bloated, but I think it's this cloudiness that we're trying to really get to. And I suppose Patty was asking early on where these precepts came from, and it's a bit of a obscure teaching that it's quite hard to get the hands on. So we've got these different versions, some that say turgid, some that turbid. But I think what's important here is that we're trying to not allow energy to become either turbid or turgid and to keep it bright and clear. So we don't want the energy within ourselves to be sort of murky, to have that quality of muddiness. What we want it to have that pristine brightness and luminosity. And I think this is sort of getting back to this whole idea about that we are energetic or electric beings by nature. And in a way, that big mind is, the big mind is available because it's all your energy by nature. There is that purity already. And I suppose it takes a lot of practice to get in touch with that experience. And that's what really our spiritual path is about. And with the fifth precept, it says to not allow energy to become turbid and to keep it bright and clear. So it's almost like your energy, it's almost like the energy is bright and clear. And what you're trying to do with this precept is you're trying not, you don't allow it to become muddy. So can you see there is this not allowing something that's naturally within. So you know, what will that mean for you? And I suppose with for me, how do I make energy turbid? I suppose if I sit down for long periods of time, that can make my energies turbid. I don't have TV at home, but I've got these couple of series that I know are dangerous for me. So like SAS program, Who Dares Wins, is like, don't go there, Pranyanita, because if you start watching one episode, you probably go through all the episodes and you've spent 12 hours watching the entire set that you've missed in that time. And I could go, like, I used to do that with Apprentice. I don't think I've seen Apprentice for last 4 years. And it's because I know it's dangerous. And I know what it will do to my energy. It will make it turbid. Because I will watch the whole thing and I'll spend hours in front of... I don't have TV, so if I watch anything, I watch it on a big screen. So my eyes get squared and I can feel it in my body. But it could be intoxicants as well. And you can think what makes your energy turbid. And then you can also think about how do you keep it bright and clear. So can you see with this precept, it's kind of given that energy is bright and clear. It's not like you have to make it bright and clear. It's given. It's like, how do you not allow it to not be bright and clear? And how do you keep it? How do you kind of sustain that energy being bright and clear? And having had, you know, for me, having had a 2-week solitary, that's for me, that does it. And it creates very particular energy within my body. And it's just knowing that, you know, about oneself. Or nature for me does that, being in the nature, or even movement, dancing, or like kung fu practice or swimming, all of that really helps the energy to keep it bright and clear, and that might be different for you. So I think I'll leave it at that. And what I suggest we do is, I think we'll just sit for a moment. I think we'll sit. I'll get us back into the body. And I'll read that text. I'll read the Shapka's test once more. And after that, we'll just have a period, a short period of reflection. But there is something nice about reflecting within a meditative space. So that's hopefully what we can do. So, yeah, find a way that will be conducive for you and for your energy to flow and be able to reflect. And just notice what's happening in the body right now at this point. On sort of a sense level, any sensations within the body, any blockages of energy within the body. And just that feeling tone as well. So just being aware if there are sensations, are they pleasant? Are they unpleasant? neither pleasant nor unpleasant, just quite neutral. Notice whether there are any particular thoughts popping out and the energy behind. Is it speedy? Has it got urgency? Is it quite mellow? Just notice your breathing body, the movement of the body with each breath. And as you're breathing out, maybe allowing your body to ground and be received by the earth. Being supported. Connected to the earth. Maybe just noticing the energy flowing through your body. Noticing its quality. Without a center, without an edge. The luminous expanse of awareness that encompasses all. This vivid, bright vastness, natural primordial presence. Without an insight. Without an outside, awareness arisen of itself, as white as the sky, beyond size, beyond direction, beyond limits, this utter complete openness, space, inseparable from awareness. Within that birthless, wide open expanse of space, phenomena appear like rainbows, utterly transparent. Pure and impure realms, Buddhas and sentient beings are seen brilliant and distinct. As far as the sky pervades, so thus awareness. As far as awareness extends, so thus absolute space. Sky, awareness, absolute space, indistinguishably intermixed. Immense, infinitely vast, the ground of samsara, the ground of nirvana, to remain day and night in this state, to enter this state easily. This is joy. Amaho. So into this space, we can just drop a question. What would it be for me? To not allow energy to become turbid. What would that be for you? I'm dropping another question in, if that's all right, like a pebble. What would it be for you to keep the energy clear and bright? How can you keep the energy clear and bright? So just making that transition in your own time, if you are sitting with eyes closed, maybe taking others into in the room, in a virtual room, into account. So what we're going to do is we're going to have groups, and we'll have half an hour in the groups, and we will still have groups in the afternoon, so for reporting out. So this group is very much, I encourage you to stay fully in the retreat at this point. And it's an opportunity to explore with others and share, being witnessed by others, where you are at, what came up from the different reflections since we saw each other in the groups last time, yesterday. Seems like aeons ago. So, yeah. And if you are not part of the group, Patricia will have you in the, I wanted to say shrine room, but it's the waiting room. And then we'll see you back in half an hour for some practice. Okay. That's reassuring. It's reassuring that the recording lady is here. So welcome back from the groups. I just had that moment, you know, when it's interesting on Zoom because we're not moving from one room onto another. We just kind of catapulted into another space. And I just sat down and I'm still full of that experience from our group. And then I just had that moment, it's me who's doing the next part of this session. So there is something about this transition, yeah, making transitions, especially because they happen so quickly on Zoom. They happen very quickly. We run from one experience and particular space to another. So I would say, yeah, let's just take our time to arrive. And it will be us practicing. And I think what I'd like us to sort of focus on is just a pure exploration of energy within. So it will be just that kind of being with what is and seeing change and how things unfold. And what we'll do is I'll sort of talk us back into a posture, and we'll have a period of chanting, and we'll chant the Amoghasiddhi mantra, and we'll try to chant it on one note, which I'm kind of realizing is really hard to do with Amoghasiddhi mantra. So it'll be interesting to stay on one note with that. And then when we finish the mantra, we will just sit, and it'll be just that period of really listening or tuning within to see what's happening within the energy within you. And it's an opportunity for you to fine tune, you know, like, so if you see energy might be turbid, I suppose, you know, it links back to Bodhidila talking about the hindrances. If you remember all those days ago, you know, like the sloth torpor. If there is that sort of in your experience when you're just sitting, you could just play with what might energize, you know, what might bring, what might raise that energy, and vice versa. If the energy is really rushing around, like, I don't know, when I did a talk and we stopped, my thoughts were so fast. So it's like, what will allow me to just calm that energy down? So in that period, with no talking and with no nothing going on after the mantra, that's just for you to be looking and just becoming familiar with your inner world and your energy and playing with that. So, yeah, let's find a posture. Say find a posture, because posture is something that you kind of settle into. And as you meditate, you make tiny adjustments sometimes. So it's got this dynamism to it. So I invite you kind of find a way, a posture that will serve you for the next 25 minutes. Maybe just even breathing out. You can really feel the earth underneath you, the ground, whatever is supporting you, whatever you're sitting on, or if you're lying down, whatever you're lying on, you can feel that support underneath. As you're breathing in, and as you're breathing out, using the breath to ground you, to root you, to create that stability for your posture for now. Creating the stability that allows stillness. Just notice your back. Is it kind of naturally extended? Does it feel supported? If you're lying down, it might be the earth supporting you. And if you're sitting, what creates that support for the back, so the back can just be very strong, it can hold your posture? What can that be for you? For me, sometimes extending the back of my neck and my crown towards the sky, and relaxing my legs, just allows that back to feel strong and steady. It allows my heart center to open and to soften. and noticing each breath as it comes in, as it comes out, just the quality of the breath. What's it like? No need to think about it. It's just resting your attention. Any way you decide, in your breathing body, and just resting the attention there, within that field of kind awareness. Relaxing. Letting go. Om Namo Gurudevaya. 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 Om Namo Gurudevaya.
Om Namo Gosiriya Hung. 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 Just making this transition very gentle. Maybe starting by bringing to mind everyone who's on the retreat. Supporting each other in our practice. In your own time, be finding a movement out of that stillness, reconnecting with the screen and everyone on the screen. So this will bring a close to our session, and I'd like to invite you to, if you can, to still remain on the retreat, especially in this period where we have before now and the 4 o'clock session, because it's so easy. I don't know what it's like for you, but in my mind, it's so easy to run into Tuesday. But actually, it's Monday, and tomorrow will be whatever it will be. But today, it's still being on a retreat. And I'd just like to invite you in that period to still honor that retreat space with whatever activity you choose to do. And it'll be really great to see you at 4 o'clock, where we're going to have an ending to our retreat. Endings are very important, and coming to, you know, closing things off is very important. And we're chatting about this with Bodhidila and Patricia before this session, and I was saying it's a little bit like when you set out to go on a course, 3-meal course, and then you leave without a third course, you know? So I invite you to be here in the afternoon and 4 o'clock. And I know that Justine will be in the middle of her night. So you'll be here with us, Justine, in our mind. You always are here, actually. Certainly in my mind, I know when it's 4 o'clock, that's sort of nighttime session for you. It's you are here because we are connected. So if you are in our minds, you are here in that way. And hopefully with everyone else, we'll see each other at 4 o'clock, and we'll have time to spend a bit more time in groups and have a closing ritual. So go well for the next few hours, and see you then.